Hello and welcome back to another episode of SLA, Second Language Acquisition for Everyone. I'm Bill Langley Bostic, he, him.
And I am Ben Fisher Rodriguez, he, him.
And today, Ben and I are going to do a little dive into the 2026 Actful Can-Do Statements.
By popular demand.
Yeah. I'm really excited to dig into these. I think the can-do, well, the Indiana standards have kind of been made off of the actual can-do statements. So, like, I'm glad to see that actual is influencing some state standards. So I've been a little bit familiarized with them for a while, even, yeah. So how, but what's your experience with can-do statements so far?
I felt lucky that I went through my teaching program and these were already available. The can-dos were around, and I was lucky that my program at UTeach Liberal Arts at the University of Texas at Austin taught us to use them as kind of the basis for our planning decisions at the unit level, at the curricular level, but then also down to the lesson level. And I think that the documents in reviewing them again for this podcast are just a great reminder and a great inspiration for how to like frame some of your planning conversations with yourself or with your peers about language functions, but then also interculturality and things like that. I attended a session when PNCFL was in Seattle a couple years ago about ACTFL's foundational documents, and I found it to be really valuable. Is that like sometimes I feel like I'm wandering in the woods because I have lots of curricular freedom and I just like make things up. So I'm like, we're talking about this now because I'm interested in that.
Yep.
Is looking back at the actual kind of foundational documents, as it were. So the proficiency standard guidelines, the performance descriptors, and then the can-do statements, these sort of main actual documents are really helpful to kind of like refocus if you're feeling a little like out there. And so you can, but also, you know, that being said, if you feel very confidently about building students' language skills through things like focus on the Sweet 16 or the Super 7 or a curriculum that you already use that you feel really confident about, you can also, you know, take with a grain of salt and take what you need from that and go forth on your path.
I got to present on culturality, intercultural communication through teaching with comprehensible input with Dr. Amanda Lanier from Michigan State University. And yeah, it's like really cool to see that the new, well, there was the intercultural reflection tool in the previous can-do statements, and interculturality had been coming up in recent actual documents. But I think this set of can-do statements are really getting at it, which I think is really special. I like it.
So Bill, sounds like we should get into it and maybe give like a high-level overview of what the can-do statements even are. Does that sound good?
Sounds great.
Let's get to it. So the can-do statements, what exactly are they? I witnessed a conversation in the big IFLT CI teaching group about these can-do statements and what are their applicability. And some people had less contact to them. Some people had more. So we figured we'd give kind of a basic like bird's eye overview of what exactly they are. So the can-dos are essentially goal statements for what a student is able to do in the language across the modes that ACTFL has laid out, interpretive, interpersonal, presentational. They have also added some can-do statements now for intercultural communication, touching on the culture standards, both from an investigative side, from like learning about products and practices and perspectives, but also from a behavioral side of being able to interact appropriately in cultural situations. So these are ways for us to set goals for entire curricula, for units, and for lessons. And again, they are exactly what they sound like. It is a statement that you can direct towards a learner that says, I can do something with the language. The emphasis being on being able to do something with the language, not knowing something about the language. So it's not, I can conjugate AR verbs correctly, because that does not accomplish communication. I mean, the products of that might, but that's the goal is not that. The goal is communication. It's not, I can know about XYZ language feature, grammatical feature. It is, what do we use language for? What are the ways? And so each of these statements is assigned to a performance descriptor. Just to make sure we're all on the same page about that, proficiency level is what you can do if we dropped you on the streets of XYZ country, a region where they only speak this language without any extra supports, how far could you get? What functionality do you have in the language? Performance then is what you're able to do when you're coached up to it in the classroom. So if you do it a whole unit about some cultural topic, some topic in the, you know, in the target cultures, you might exceed your day-to-day proficiency and abilities because you've been coached up to it. You've been learning about it extensively in your class. That's what our classes are for, is coaching up those performances in essence. And then underneath that, you have can-dos assigned to that. So can-dos show the evidence that the student has met that performance descriptor, that they are turning their performances towards proficiency at that level. Those performance descriptors are broken down by function, context, and text type. Function. Let's talk language function. This is what you're able to actually do and accomplish in the language. Novices are going to present simple, basic information on familiar topics, understand it, and be able to interact about it. Intermediates are going to be able to express their own thoughts and present information and preferences on familiar topics. Whereas advanced speakers are going to be able to produce narratives and descriptions in all major timeframes on familiar and some unfamiliar topics. Now, underneath these kind of like big descriptions that I just gave you are then like the things that people actually do with language, like accepting or refusing an invitation, making a recommendation, negotiating, narrating, expressing opinions and dislikes and likes, giving reasons and explaining causality, thanking people. Warning, listing, expressing doubt or indecision, encouraging, explaining. These are actually things that we do with the language every day as we interact with others, as we read and listen and watch. These are the things that we're actually accomplishing with the language. We're warning our friends about the incoming inclement weather. We're narrating our past experiences. Those are the things we actually do with the language. So those are functions. Those are language functions.
And a handy list of these can be found in The Keys to Planning for Learning from ACTFL.
And I found a very slay. I don't know where I found this or who owns this document, but somebody condensed all of these language functions onto a single page that I actually have printed out and put next to my desk for my planning. And so I will link those in the show notes for our listeners so you can take a look at that. But I also recommend that book if you're just interested in how these can-dos figure into that sort of planning.
Which I'm sure is that book's going to be updated.
So each can-do has function. So what are you actually accomplishing in the language? The next thing it has is context. These are the actual contexts that you might have use these communicative functions for. Novices start at the very, very familiar, very concrete, close to them. So things about the self, the home, the friends, school, weather, clothing, food, time, pets and animals, etc. Those are all things that are very close context-wise to the learner and usually show up as novice language. Intermediates are going to do stuff like everyday life in their local community, travel, occupations, health, shopping, experiences and events, my dreams, my hopes, my ambitions. These are more contexts that are moving a little bit further away from the concrete around the self and moving kind of into the community. Advanced contexts are often issues of global importance, current events, extended narratives. So gradually it's like a blooming onion of language context that starts with the very close to the self and kind of moves outwards out into the world. Obviously, our students touch on sort of worldly things in novice language, but being able to understand and use language in discussions of worldly topics at the level that people across the world are talking about them is slightly different than that. So context. So function, what you do with the language, context, kind of about what in what neighborhood of language and what neighborhood of topic. And the last thing is text type. This is where Bill and I both are kind of big friends of the Avant Advanced training for understanding the ACTFL performance descriptors and proficiency levels. Yes. Text type is a big part of that. And the text types are the things that we've heard from, like words, phrases, simple sentences, strings of sentences, starts to get kind of ambiguous, connected sentences, pre-paragraph discourse, structured paragraphs. What the difference between all those things are, Bill and I learned a little bit better in each of our languages by doing that Avant Advanced course.
And I think it's in the glossary. Like they break them down in the glossary.
Yeah, totally. So there are glossaries in this document so well that kind of list out what those specific things mean. But obviously, as students or learners get more language, they're able to produce longer connected bits of language.
And get more specific and be clearer.
Again, each can-do at the linguistic level for the communication standards is broken down by function, context, and text type. Now, this goes across all the modes. Interpretive, what can you see? What can you read? What can you hear? And what functions can you understand within that? What context can you understand within that and interpret and analyze? What text types can you observe? Like a low novice is going to be looking at a world of words and be picking out individual words that they know, some of which may or may not be cognates with the L1. Whereas an advanced speaker is going to be able to follow an extended conversation about a worldly topic and be able to have complex thoughts about the things that they learn as over the course of that conversation. So, and similarly with like interpersonal communication, are you able to sustain a conversation over a longer period of time, or is it a shorter, more halting, more kind of sentence to sentence back and forth? Presentational, similar thing. I think this is what we think of when we think of like output. We're like presentational output, like talking in front of a class or writing some sort of paper or composition, whatever. What sort of functions are they doing in that presentational writing? What is the context for it? What is the text type that comes emerges out of that? Are they leaning a lot on their L1 to produce and that makes it more novice-y? Or are they producing idiomatic language and transitional elements and those sorts of things that make it more advanced? So those are the linguistic considerations. Again, a note that it is very helpful and kind of to everyone's benefit to understand the performance descriptors at a more nitty-gritty level. And I recommend some sort of training in that. I've also done the OPI familiarization workshop, which got me more used to the broader proficiency swaths of like novice, intermediate, advanced, superior. And so just as much as you can work to understand those things a little more deeply, these will be more fruitful for your reading and use.
And then am I completely off base? Oh, the consistency piece as well.
Yeah. The sublevels is the doing the thing at that proficiency level, then you're mid. Then you're right in the middle. If you're doing it weekly, you're just holding on for your life, you're low in that proficiency level. If you're starting to do some of the functions of the next level, that's when you're high. So there we go.
Thanks.
Now, ACTFL has also added, I believe the 2017 update added the intercultural can-dos as well. As I kind of previously mentioned, is that these are broken down in investigation. So being able to learn about these products, practices, and perspectives in the ACTFL kind of model of how we talk about culture, mm-hmm. but also interaction. So how we can use language in culturally appropriate ways, how we can use our behaviors in culturally appropriate ways. And there's a whole spectrum of behaviors from just listing things that we notice about another culture, like, oh, they have these foods, these are the holidays they celebrate, this is what typical clothing looks like, up to explaining and kind of describing more extensively these things, to comparing, and then finally to sort of mediating the differences between cultures, because you have such a firm grasp and understanding of both cultures, the one that you were working from and the target cultures, that you're able to kind of go between them in some sort of way, act as a mediator. So the intercultural communication standards are broken down into investigation and interaction. I think this is most helpful is to kind of hear examples. So like at the novice level, I can identify locations to buy something and how culture affects where people shop. So I don't know, just for instance, German speakers are more likely to go to a bunch of smaller shops than a big supermarket if given the choice. And that was very German to me when I lived in Eastern Germany. And then interaction kind of that married to that is I can use rehearsed behaviors when shopping in a familiar type of store. So if we send a kid to the store, are they going to be able to have polite interactions with shopkeeps, etc.? Then at something more like the intermediate level, our listeners will forgive us if you hear a lot of paper shuffling. I printed out all these documents to read them and then was like, I have personally felled 8,000 trees. Whoopsie-daisy. At the advanced level, it's something more like, I can describe the cultural influences on the designs of houses, buildings, and towns. So way more linguistically complex on the linguistic side of things, but also kind of belies a deeper understanding of the culture by understanding cultural influences. So you're talking about history, you're talking about how history expresses itself and how that affects how people live. And then in interaction, interculturally advanced communicator might adjust their personal space and body language accordingly when interacting with others in a business, school, or work environment. So they have been able to adopt some of the behaviors that allow them to convey respect in that culture or allow them to, you know, interact appropriately in various social situations. So these, again, are broken down into investigation and interaction. so that you can see like there are things that we are looking at and naming and comparing, but there are also ways that we behave. And there are also types of communication. Some of them have to do with being able to communicate with a speaker of that language and connect and make a plan, or connect and describe both of your living situations, your schooling situations, or whatever. Now, Billion, this is so much. It's so much information. It's a lot.
So, and like, much.
I printed pages upon pages upon pages of document, and I think if I didn't know better, I would feel freaked out by just the sheer volume of kind of information and context provided. So, what can one do with these sorts of things? My takeaway, which I got from reading the latest edition of The Language Educator, which is our Actful Language Teacher magazine. It's not the research one. That's the Foreign Language Annals. This is more the classroom teacher facing. In the latest edition of The Language Educator, they introduce the 2026 Necessful, Actful, Can-Do statements and say one thing that we can do as practitioners is to start with the culture, start with the intercultural can-dos, take the investigation or interaction can-dos, because if we lead with culture, then they're going to get natural language out of it. And these intercultural can-do statements are linked linguistically to the communication can-dos. And so they're not going to be asking for some sort of intercultural investigation or in the target language that is linguistically beyond a student at that proficiency level. So what you can do is start with the culture, start with an intercultural statement at the student level.
And then may I chime in?
Yeah, totally.
You may have seen that the E has released their new course description for next year. And I think starting with the cultural investigation is going to really help AAP students nail the new exam.
And I can only imagine for the IB exam where they have to, you know, describe pictures extensively and things like that, that can only be a good thing. And they're supposed to engage with a variety of text types. This really lends itself to that. Yeah. So start with that intercultural can do and then work your way back into the what language students will need. How can they interpret resources about said cultural topic? How can they interact about them and interpersonally how they can present about them? And that kind of like is the engine for your planning. Now, again, this kind of requires an understanding and goal setting of what proficiency levels you think you're working towards or in. So I can only encourage our listeners again to get some sort of training into that. If that's interesting to you, it will help you use these documents, I think, more efficiently. Because, of course, we all want our students to be advanced. But if we pick one of the advanced intercultural can-dos and then pick the linguistic can-dos out of that, we're going to be reaching far beyond the levels of our current students if they're in, you know, level one or two or something like that, or even three and four. So familiarity with that as for purposes of your goal setting is important. I believe we've talked in this podcast about goal setting and what is appropriate proficiency levels and performances within. And that in the grammar and context book, we talked about how a student can be at a proficiency level, like a novice proficiency level, but we're coaching them towards intermediate performances in the language so we can start drawing on those intermediate can-dos. It's a lot of information. It's a lot going on. But again, if you're kind of aware of the proficiency levels and have that in your vocabulary, your repertoire, then these can be a really powerful tool. I found a lot of really just kind of interesting things. And I was like, oh, I guess that is the angle I can take with said topic with my students. We're in the middle of March Music Madness in German land. Ooh. And one of their novice intercultural communication statements was, I can identify some artists and musicians, their styles and contributions. And then the interaction was, I can recommend sites to experience a variety of local music and art styles. So being able to talk.
Which that seems pretty easy and straightforward, but like you've got knowledge that a German speaking person would have. Yeah. And that's pretty cool.
We're exploring German language musicians, but then, you know, that kind of knowledge of German language music is going to help them if a German speaker comes to the United States and we wanted to talk about the music scene around here. We have to know the differences in the musical cultures a little bit, or, you know, what is typical of our area. So it requires a bit of self-knowledge, too. And I think that's pretty neat.
Neato.
Bill, do you think that these are only for practitioners like us? Are they only for teachers?
No, in fact, in the documents, they do talk about how to help use them for student goal setting. And I think this is like a really smart move for anyone. It's it puts language function right there at the beginning. So immediately students are going to be able to know, like, can I do this thing? Rather than do I know X, Y, Z about the language? And then, like, they can see that, oh, yeah, like, I can do this in this context, but over here in this context, maybe not. And it's, like, very student-friendly. So the students can see very easily, can I do this or can't I?
I know that the can-dos has specifically have been kind of fundamental for FIL, which is Facilitated Interdependent Language Learning, which is where students are set up with a program to learn the language of their choice, but they have to do it more or less independently. It could be because there's not a course offered in it. It could be, that's usually the reason, obviously, that is that just there's not necessarily a course offered in an institution for it, but the students still have the drive to learn the language. I learned about this from Michelle Aoki, and I will link her blog in the references as well, because it is really cool what they do. Part of the utility of these can-do statements is being able to set realistic goals for oneself and then reflect on how it went. And so that can be a really cool thing for that. So it's for goal setting in classrooms. It can be goal setting for independent learners. It can be curricular for us. It also is, again, if we're able to speak to the functionality that our students have in the language, that helps us make a stronger case for language towards any stakeholders, including but not limited to parents, administrators, school district level administrators, state legislators, etc. Housed in all this documentation, and again, I'm sorry if our listeners hear me shuffling, I was hoping you would talk about it, Bill, was the intercultural reflection tool. What is that?
Sure. So in order to be able to actually achieve some sort of intercultural competence, reflection has to be in there. You have to reflect, because part of interculturality is understanding your own culture. So you have to be able to reflect on your own culture so that you can compare and contrast with another. And they give, in the documents, they give an intercultural reflection tool for us to use or to adapt. So they kind of structure an intercultural lesson or activity as an introductory in-class activity in the new language, maybe viewing a video and trying to notice, oh, this is similar to what I do. These are the foods that they eat. And then at home, doing deep reflection in English or the home language or in the new language. And they talk about how, I'll just read it. The primary focus of language education is to develop language proficiency. However, deep reflection normally occurs in one's first language. For this reason, the reflective activities in the intercultural reflection tool correspond to the can-do statements performance indicators to allow the maximum use of language in class time, but allowing the home language at home. And then a follow-up activity in class in the new language. So do something in class, go home, reflect, come back to something more. And they've got the sections on it, just some of the examples. They have the learning target for intercultural communication, a description of what the activity is. For this one, students went on a field trip and they had to greet someone at a store. On the reflection, they had to write down in English what they noticed in the store beyond, like, oh, they also did a scavenger hunt. But they had to write down what they noticed beyond what the list on for the scavenger hunt. They have them do then like a question about what was similar or different to the stores you go to. And then a poll on comfort in doing the thing. So I felt comfortable in the store and would like to go back. I thought it was fun to discover new foods in the store. Down to, I liked field trips, but I'm not really interested in learning about new food. And then a closing activity, which would be in class. And then the teacher asks yes or no, either or, and short answer questions in the language to help students think deeply about the language that they did share. Pretty cool stuff.
It is pretty cool. I was looking at through some of them and looked at like a sample activity that they put into the intermediate band with the investigative can do of I can identify and compare the values expressed by the way people celebrate holidays or festivals. And the interaction is I can adjust the way I dress to make it appropriate for a celebration or event. And it had the focus of
dang
using
I like
the
yeah.
United States context of the 4th of July and Independence Day and kind of pre-journaling about how their family celebrates 4th of July or not. What are some of the traditions associated with that in their family or in the US? Kind of underlying values that are under it. Having kids preview, like, is there a similar sort of celebration in the target culture? And how do you think people celebrate it? And then the cultural activity would be having a live video call with somebody from the culture or kind of interacting with them or watching a video about it or, you know, pre-recording of, you know, some sort of video call about that exact sort of thing. And you prepared or impromptu questions about a similar cultural holiday and how they relate to it, what values they think it expresses. In the classes, the teacher scaffolds this, can create a Venn diagram to kind of compare and contrast. Mm-hmm. And then the students can reflect afterwards, like, what did you learn about yourself and others regarding the celebration of X national holiday or whatever it is, and the values that underlie that. So the linguistic part, again, is in class. It is the active interview with somebody from the target culture, which as somebody who's invited guest speakers like that, both in video and in person, like, kids go crazy for that. It is so cool to be able to use the language live like that to them. And they're like, wait a minute, I do know this language. And my kids, for some reason, always allege that I am teaching them a fake language, that it's just like a secret language that I made up. And they're like, so I don't know. Anyways, so you're maximizing that target language time in class and giving them that cultural experience, but also making the space for them to preview it and think about it ahead of time and then think about it after. When I was in the Teacher of the Year Wildness circuit, I was able to co-present with Alicia Dahlman Shoemaker about aha moments and interculturality. And her kind of the big thing that still I come away with every time is that students need just like multiple exposures to the same cultural phenomena, to the same ideas and even, you know, realia and videos and things and experiences, because in between their brain is working on it subconsciously and they're having more life experiences and they're learning more about the world and allows them to chew on it for longer. And they might later have an aha moment about something that they learned about long ago or even a couple days ago, but it just took its time to get there because their brain had to do a lot of synthesis of pretty complex, abstract, sometimes cultural phenomena and things like that. So I think this kind of like preview language activity and then reflect again helps build that capacity for having those aha moments.
You know what I think is the best kind of aha moment, and maybe just like, I don't want to say the pinnacle, but like, being able to answer a question on Jeopardy because of the cultural knowledge that you have. I film them every single time that something that we've talked about in class is a clue on Jeopardy because I'm like, see, you know this.
You could clean up at Jeopardy if you paid attention.
If you paid attention, you would win Jeopardy.
That's true. That is cool. That's a fun flex. But again, yeah. Like this, and this can all come from basing our planning around these investigation and interaction can do statements. Right. Is like having, again, complex linguistic things happening in class, complex cognitive things happening in and out of class. The things that if we get these kids thinking about these phenomena outside of class, that's really right. A ringer. Any other?
Or when you get kids saying like, oh yeah, I added this song to my playlist. Oh, that's a big like, one. Right.
Or yeah, the TikTok feed has entirely turned into weird German right? brain rot or something.
Yeah, I had a very, very wild idea. And like to see if anything existed, and I don't know, but how wild would it be to have like, and I think you're going to hate this, but like a VR exchange, intercultural exchange, like even down to like, the technology would need to be like crazy, but like, I was just thinking, like, because I don't ever talk to anyone in the virtual world because that's, like, weird. But, like, I go check things out. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's cool. But, like, people speaking other languages all the time, like, it's just kind of like this hot spot of interculture. And, like, I'm really interested to see what comes of intercultural investigations if, well, with slash if VR comes more mainstream.
Let the record reflect that I'm not over here printing out student handouts with a printing press because I'm against technology in my little classroom. I'm an AI hater, Bill. Let the listeners hear this. I think VR, you kind of hit me with that one because I was like, oh man, I would kill for like be able to take my students on like a tour of the school where I worked in Chemnitz and then sit down with a class in the school and like talk to them about what we see and what we're thinking about and sort of stuff would just be like
Yeah.
so lit.
Well, I did a when I did an architecture unit, and I took my headset into class so students could visit La Sagrada Familia, so that they could visit La Puente de la Mujer in Buenos Aires. It was pretty cool. And so I had a student sit on a spinny chair so that they could look around and not like run into things. And then the ideal outcome would have been that the student wearing the headset described what they saw, and the other students in the class guessed based on their description. Kind of like VR GeoGuessr,
The kids
which
who
I
go
also
crazy with
think is
GeoGuessr, by the way.
which is also super intercultural.
Absolutely.
All right.
I think we're set up to talk about the changes between the two documents. The most recent version prior to this one that we have in our hands now was released in 2017, and 2026, literally hot off the press like a week or two ago, we got our hands on these can-do statements, and very helpfully, Necessful and Actful created a comparison document that shows the kind of changes that went into these can-do statements, which is great, super helpful. This document summarizes the kind of big differences between this. So we're going to get into it just in case you didn't want to. I'd say I started just went through this page by page and kind of looked back and forth. The first starts with the intercultural communication can-do statements and kind of the overarching proficiency benchmarks and performance indicators. One thing I liked that was a change is that they added the caveat of understanding products, practices, and perspectives in my own culture. One of the things that I like harp on in presentations is that like interculturality means between, right? Between two. And so we have to be able to establish what our own culture is, what our own cultural influences are, in order to kind of reflect most deeply and accurately, I think, on the target cultures. And so often an experience I was having was I, serve a lot of white European American students, and they would just be like, well, we don't have culture. Like, I'm just like normal. And you're like, that's loaded. But then they just were not aware that like the way that our school schedule is set up is cultural, and the foods that they eat are cultural, and the activities that they do with their friends are cultural, and that our homecoming was cultural, and that, they just all do that. Every single thing is culture. So developing that self-knowledge of like your own culture is, I think, super valuable and kind of essential in this like investigative thing of being able to compare products, practices, and perspectives, because yeah, you're coming at seeing these other things from your lens. And so you need to know and own your lens first in order for that to, again, be most like realistic and impactful.
What is it? Windows, doors, and mirrors, or
Yeah,
something?
windows, mirrors, sliding glass doors. So being able to see yourself, being able to see others, and being able to step in some measure to like into other cultures and experience them.
Something that I really like, if you don't mind if I talk about the sub levels of investigation.
Yeah.
So again, investigation is broken down into products and practices. The benchmark statement, I guess, is how does my investigation of products and practices help me understand perspectives? And I really like the emphasis on the student's action there. Like, I have to put something into it to understand perspectives. So they also reworded all of the statements from starting with in my own and other cultures, I can identify something, something, something. I can compare. I can explain. And about like two on to help me understand perspectives.
Yes.
And then practice and how practices are related to perspectives. So getting to that connection at the end. So it's like building, building, building. But also, like the skills have to develop. Like, I have to be able to understand this so I can move up to this next level.
But just being able to identify cultural products is just the base skill, right? I need to be able to identify that this, the whatever food they serve at the Hofbräuhaus beer hall in Munich is a cultural product, as is the tailgate barbecue that I have before the football game. Like, those are both cultural products that reveal a perspective about the culture.
I remember this stuck in my head from a presentation I went to years ago. Culture, like the product or practice, can even be as simple as us, the US, having drive-through coffee shops versus European countries or other countries.
Down cafe with the waiter.
Sit-down cafe, right? Like that in itself is something that students can identify. They might not be able to describe why the differences are there yet, but or why they. The different cultures do things differently, but yeah. I will say my biggest challenge is the interaction one. I like the well, behavior, I guess. Language, I get. Idioms, things like that that help us understand syntactic order, stuff like that that help us understand what someone's saying. Like, I just feel like the behaviors are really hard to get unless you're there.
They
And like
are.
it feels very to try to teach it. You know, like I'm not going to be like, oh yeah, well when you go to we're going to Costa Rica with a school trip. So when you go, you might like when you greet someone, they might kiss you on the cheek. And but like I can't practice that in my class. That's weird to practice in my class.
Yeah, in the United States, that's culturally inappropriate, often in many circles. Totally.
Right. So it's hard to, but that's also like a reflection thing. Like, would I be able to? How would I feel?
It would
Because I
take finding
remember.
lots of like video content that you can find where like these cultural practices happen, or like photos or narrative texts or descriptive texts that have those product practices. But the practices is really tough in this, like the behavioral bits of it, because I think like I can tell my students that German people are more likely to stare at you in public, and that my theory is that this underlies their like view that society should be very ordered, and that should be very orderly, that like public spaces should be very orderly. And so they are just, essentially, I don't want to say policing is not quite the right word, but they're like looking around at each other to try to like maintain that social order,
Accountability.
in accountability in public spaces for how people are behaving. But again, like once you experience it, like that's a different feeling than, just knowing that, I guess, intellectually. And so they need to be able to, or the fact, Germans, like my experience has been that Germans have a smaller bubble of personal space if you're in a conversation with them. And I did not know that until I was having a conversation with someone at this like function in Berlin, and then was like, why do I feel suffocated? But all the rest of my interactions about German had been seated at my university desk, right? I agree that those are hard, and it would take, a lot of what it describes an intercultural communication tool is about showing lots of short video clips of people greeting each other, or showing lots of short video clips about this and that. Obviously, that takes time to find, and you kind of, where do you, how we allocate our time, that is so precious, is a big question. But I'm with you. The behavior sort of stuff is hard to do. That being said, like the performance indicators, including things like adjusting your own behavior to be more respectful towards another culture, I found to be very interesting, and I think that that's a good place. Those are, they took out, there's some minor semantic changes here and there on some of these like performance indicators, but it is like demonstrating awareness of subtle differences in cultural behaviors, incorporating culturally appropriate behaviors in some unfamiliar situations. These, I think, are definitely goal areas. And I think my kind of takeaway from this too is just that a lot about these cultural ones are about skills of observation and skills of like, they took out suspend judgment from like the superior investigation benchmark. But I think being able to step outside of ourselves and kind of do as much observation as possible, and integrate what we're observing into our behaviors, is a skill that I really want my kids to learn. So being able to make minor quick adjustments, being able to recognize when things are inappropriate and adjust accordingly, are skills that need building as well. It's just tough, like you said. Yeah, we're not gonna like set up these like weird social situations that are just not realistic to what's actually happening in our US American high school classroom.
Can students do these in their own language and in their own culture too? Like, for example, the novice behavior performance indicator is I can use appropriate rehearsed behaviors and recognize some obviously inappropriate behaviors in familiar everyday situations. To be quite honest, I don't know if students are able to do that in their first culture.
Not my fourth period. Hello.
Fearless, I still love you.
Oh no, that's those are my babies, my juniors, my seniors. But anyways.
No, I'm good. There's so much in here.
Yeah, well, and then you get into like the communication ones, like interpretive one. There are some minor semantic sort of things. One thing that they took out of the novice proficiency benchmark for interpretive communication is recognizing practiced or memorized words, phrases, and simple sentences.
Been dropped out of the call, so I'm just gonna wrap this up here. All right. Until next time, go slay. Bye.